You're listening to Kerlec Herbarium's podcast interview series with Scott Richardson Reed. Today I had the great pleasure of interviewing Julia and Gillian, all about their new Isabel Gowdy album that you'll hear about shortly. And I have to say, special thanks goes out to the church in Glasgow, where they allowed us to talk all things witchy in the basement of their church, and even provided us with tea and coffee. So that's pretty awesome. Anyway, over to the interview.
I'm Gillian Chadwick, and I mostly live in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
And I'm Julia Jeffrey, and I'm an artist based in Glasgow.
So how did you two meet each other? Not that it's like a date situation.
No, we met in the old days of MySpace. And my record producer friend at the time, Greg Weeks, was a great one for bringing people together that he thought would like each other. And he had found Julia's artwork on MySpace and sent it to me. And the story I always tell is that he said, oh, you like fairy art, you know, you'll like this woman. And I was like, you don't know me. I don't just like fairies. And then I saw it and I loved it. I loved it. And the key point is that in the days of MySpace, you know, you could have a song on your page. And Julia had a song by the band Comus, one of my favorite tunes, the song Diana, that's like just a fairy freak out. Really kind of esoteric,
wild.
You know.
It's like nothing else. Stuff.
So I knew we should be friends, and I wrote her an email. And,
And I then checked out Jillian's page and her music, and I think it was maybe around the time that The Door into Summer, your first album, came out, so I was kind of listening to that and loved it and just really responded and thought I was excited that this cool American musician chick was getting in touch with me.
And then I was on tour with another band, and we played at the Captain's Rest in Glasgow, and Julia came out and we got to meet in person. And then she's visited me in America, and somewhere along the way I woke up one morning and just drank a bunch of coffee and felt like taking over the world.
And you said coffee.
Yeah. And I wrote to her, and I was like, let's do a concept album. We love 70s prog. Like, let's do something. You do all the artwork, I'll do the music. And that's how we really started working together.
And I was just so instantly on board with the idea of that. I think at that point it felt like a sort of sign from the beyond. This is what I was supposed to be doing, and we kind of batted around a couple of ideas, and I think Isabel was kind of the second thing that I suggested. And although Gillian,
I hadn't heard of her,
but you really responded just to a kind of brief outline of me telling you.
Yeah, it seemed obvious that was
what I knew at that point. Mm-hmm. Something.
So when you say Isabel, that's the name of your project or the album?
So the project is under my band name, X Reverie, but it is the Isabel Gowdy. I think we're just calling it Isabel Gowdy.
I think we are. We it was like, see if anything comes up that seems right, which it sort of hasn't. So I think Isabel Gowdy is the title, the album title.
So in terms of, sorry, this just made a really weird fart noise. It's just like, what was that? Where was that actually coming from? Sign of the
Beyond. Maybe Isabel.
Yeah.
We do.
So in terms of your, the album idea, do you want to tell us a little bit about who Isabel is and how it kind of came about and how maybe the artwork speaks to the music? And vice versa.
Mm. Well, Julia knew of Isabel first through, I think, music and through history. So maybe you should.
Yeah. So initially, the first place that I heard of Isabel Gowdy was as a young child, as a kind of 5-year-old wee girl, I think, from my dad's album by the sensational Alex Harvey Band. And there's a song called Isabel Gowdy on the album Framed, and it's an amazing, wild, intense, dramatic song, and it kind of had a huge impact on me growing up. So it was something that had been part of my life just forever, it felt. And for a long time before we started this, I had wanted to do some artwork based on Isabel Gowdy, and I had never quite got it together. This seemed like the kind of perfect moment, and that this was it. And I'd read up about her in later years, and I kind of just knew that she was this famous historical Scottish witch, and that her sort of, there's lots of completely inaccurate and apocryphal stories floating around about Isabel Gowdy and how she cursed her accusers, which is nowhere actually documented. And so it wasn't until we got our teeth into this that we really started researching properly and kind of getting down to the nuts and bolts of...
But we read her confessions first,
I think,
and which was pretty hard for me to understand. I had to actually read them out loud to kind of hear it in an accent. You know, the way that they're written is not clear on paper at all.
They're hard going for someone Scottish.
Yeah. But they came through. Once I started reading them out loud, I thought, okay, now it's...
Yeah.
It's just sound like I'm speaking in a Scottish accent.
But yeah. the spelling and the language is archaic, so
right.
It's quite chewy to kind of work your way through. But once we've developed like a degree of familiarity with the testimony, it got a lot easier. And that happens surprisingly quickly, I think.
Absolutely.
So how did the kind of testimony impact then on the kind of style and art and music? So the testimony, I guess, for people that don't know, if you want to hear my voice, is... in the Pitcairns, judge.
Isabel's full documentation of her trial testimony exists in a book called Ancient Criminal Trials in Scotland, which is published in, I think, 1833 and written by Robert Pitcairn. Oh. And it's... it's very kind of dusty-seeming academic tome, and it's not even in the main volume. It's Isabel is like tucked away in the third appendix of this tome, and but it's all there, which is amazing.
And I think she's famous for the reason that her name has made it into pop culture before, is that she gave, you know, unlike the sad women who were, you know, the victims of these trials, who were obviously tortured for their, you know, confessions. She just went nuts with these. She did three voluminous.
There's four.
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 Julie's the historian. The just lurid, detailed, you know, raunchy, evil, like,
and
personal confession.
Fourth is a really dirty one too, so
yeah.
You don't forget about that.
I can't. That's the one most of the record came from.
I don't think I've read that one.
I highly recommend it. So, yeah, I think that she, you know, to me, there was just that instant spark of this idea of why? What was different about her? It's this super defiant act. It reads like just complete insanity, but there's too much humor and self-awareness
absolutely.
In it. It reads like just a total defiance against this terrible, thing that was being done to her and this fate that was guaranteed from the moment that she was in, you know, taken in. So I love that. It completely fit with the, you know, the other thing that brings Julia and I together. We love witchcraft, we love fantasy artwork, but we also both really love 70s heavy rock and roll, specifically these, like, I always describe it as like when Led Zeppelin started singing about hobbits. You know, there's this moment in the 70s where fantasy and, you know, sexual power that comes through rock and roll, through these guitars, and it's very a very magical time. And so something about her story, you know, being a woman trying to make heavy rock and roll, it just clicked right into place that it, you know, she was right at this little, you know, she's this ley line for us, I'm trying to think of the right term, but of fantasy, magic, and just defiant female power, and it is she's not a pretty story. She's not an easy story at all. But that makes it so much more interesting and so much more, like you said, sort of chewy for rock music. Yeah, so that's my understanding of Isabel. And I probably didn't go as deep. We both read
Emma Wilby's amazing book, The Visions of Isabel Gowdie, which was enormously helpful and inspiring.
Enormous.
And so I read At That. I read most of it, and I read some of the funny kind of pop culture, Pulp Fiction-y renditions of her, you know, have no historical bearing at all, but it was all just trying to take in the character of Isabel and speak as her and speak in, you know, songs are written in the first person and they're also about my own life at the time, but that was what drew me to her, was this idea of this just unquenchable, raw, dangerous female power.
I think we both felt that we wanted to inhabit the character of Isabel as fully as possible while making this.
For better or worse.
And there were hard times and we joked throughout about Isabel taking her tithe of us for this project. Yeah. And, there were calamities and
freak snowstorms and breakups. She took her payment.
Yeah.
She was embodied maybe a little bit.
I invoked her a little bit.
I think so.
And that was the intention.
And Hell Mendes for doing that, really.
So in terms of Isabel's story, it's quite a lengthy 4-volume confession. There's lots of different things that you could probably have used in an album and for inspiration for artwork. Is there any kind of standout moments?
Yes, absolutely. The first song I wrote about it is the song Isabel, and it's about her meeting with the devil. Am I correct that the devil, the devil of Isabel is sort of linked to fairy
folk
as well?
Certainly Emma Wilby puts that forward, that he
is... not necessarily a Christian devil, is it? I think of him more as a goat, pan figure.
There are lots of parallels, certainly in that book, about the devil being more like the fairy man, an elf and knight. There are, she points up a folk ballad that comes in various forms, and it's Lady Isabel and the Elfin Knight, I think it's called, and he's a bad lot, the Elfin Knight, in that he's sort of murdering fiend and
So that moment of her meeting him, and that was me trying to write about, to me, what the key point of the story was, that she was this extremely repressed figure, Isabel. I mean, it was a terrible time to be a young woman in a terrible place, probably for most everyone who wasn't a royal. And her escape from a marriage, an unhappy marriage, and running off with this sexy sort of devil figure. So that's that.
Thank you.
But there's also the song Transformation is straight from the confession. It's her spell, her transformation from human to animal. And we both, I think, visualize that as a circular kind of dance almost. And so I tried to make the music very, it's like a, we sing in a round. And
it's an incredible, like, layering of vocals parts that I...
Yeah.
We added some other voices, but when I first heard it in demo form, it was all Jillian, but it was, this, you know, densely layered, incredible, yeah, dancing.
It's supposed to be like a, she's running around sort of in circles and reciting the spell, and she's in different points of transformation through it. So.
And the lyrics, a section of the lyrics, it's completely right. Just taken direct from the testimony. Yeah. And it's the hair yeah. transformation spell. Mm-hmm. But I love that it's direct.
I think that's the most pure quote.
Yeah.
Although going in the devil's name, I think.
Yeah.
Is another one. So I tried to work in the language as much as possible. But all of the songs are directly related to things.
First the word, then a breath, then a quick shout. A blinding light and a sudden rush of sound. Lifted up and put back down. Landing light and light upon the ground. Ooh, little girl, with your heart held like a fist, come run with us. Run and rend with wrath so swift. Taste blood and salt, broken bones, blinking eyes up from the earth. Tooth and claw we rise.
Downy Mountain, where they go to meet with it just suddenly turns into an elf king and queen who live under this mountain, and they have these bulls guarding the gate or gnashing their teeth. what else? Red Reaver is about the moment when, like, an actual coven meeting in the Kirk of Eldorn.
And the Red Reaver is Isabel's sort of fairy, not fairy, a spirit. Who is her personal spirit in the coven. Everyone, all the members of the coven have a spirit that attends upon them, and they've all got kind of fantastic names. And she describes also their outfits and the colours that they dress in. So Isabel's personal spirit is the Red Reaver, and he dresses all in black, of course. And,
that's when she pledges to belong to the double. So that's in there too, the one hand on my head and one hand on my foot.
Yeah.
And then I pledge everything in between, which is a cool image, even though you can't imagine physically doing that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the darkest sort of scene I tried to describe. More of the coven members in there, but they never quite made the cut.
There isn't room and time for everything. There's so many. Jeannie Martin, Jeannie Martin, the coven, and I did a piece of art based on her, which might or might, depending on how big the book ends up being.
Right, she might make it into the artwork.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say that when you're describing the music, you're using quite visual language. So has there been quite a kind of crossover between imagining the story of the song and the artwork that kind of intertwines with the...
Very much.
Really fully collaborative.
Yeah, all the way through the process, we've kind of... We've been on opposite sides of the Atlantic most of the time, but we've had Skype conversations, and Gillian's been over a few times during the... because it was recorded here, but a lot of it was just Skype calls.
Conversation.
Just batting things back and forth. And I think we sparked each other off continually through the process. I would hear a new demo and it would send my visual thoughts in a particular direction, and I think vice versa.
I think the songs, pretty much I wrote the songs and you painted... once you knew what the song was going to be. But the inspiration for each song after the first one was, I would say, I think I want to do something about, you know, the Red Reaver scene. That might be like one of this heavier riff I'm working with.
Yeah.
So it was very much
quite general conversation and then things
It was
cool.
It was really wonderful.
So how long did the dialogue go on for?
Years. Too long. I was much younger than when we started. A couple relationships ago. I think I lived in New England for 3 years during the middle of that. Probably about 5 years total. I recorded the album a few years ago now, but we were just sort of batting it back and forth as an idea, and I came to visit. I came to mix a record that I'd done with another woman in England, Sharon Krause. We have a side project called Rasalnia, which is like pagan folk. And so I'd come to mix a record with her, and I thought, I'm going to go up and visit Julia in Scotland. And Julia, being the force of nature that she is, said, well, you should play an extra every show. And I said, Julia, I don't have a band. it's not a solo thing. She said, well, that's not a problem. I'll put a band together for you.
Amazing.
And I have a show booked for you. So it was this crazy thing. I came up for just a few days, and I practiced with these amazing men that I'd never met before. We practiced all day, and then we played that night.
And it was terrific.
It was so good. And it was after that that I said, I should just come and make this. It's a Scottish woman who's inspiring us. I should just come and make it in Scotland. Up till that point, I figured I would just record it in Philly, where I always record my albums. So that's how it became a full, Glaswegian cast with one random Indeed. American woman at the helm. And then I came back, so we sort of set it up, and maybe 6 months later, came back and we recorded it, and it was an incredible experience, the pure magic.
And we had a sort of perfect location.
It was recorded in an old mill building up in Straven, and it's right in the ruins, you know, the ruins of Straven Castle are right there, which to me is, I don't get castles, you know, where I come from, so it was perfect. Go every day, and it was just stormy, and there's this ruined castle with, like, jagged teeth of the stone, and then we were in this just ancient building recording it in a little theater they had in this old mill. So it was a purely amazing experience. And again, we only had about three rehearsals. I sent over a bunch of demos, but we practiced maybe three nights in the basement of the 13th Note pub, because Justin, yep. you know, cooked there at the time. And then we went in and recorded this album, and it was just one of those experiences where it worked so much better. It could have been a complete disaster, mm-hmm. but it was really magical, and I think everyone involved felt it. But the day that Julia came to visit and do some vocals, there was a freak snowstorm yes. that started the moment.
it was sort of this time of year where again we're having freakishly awful weather, but it hadn't been, and it, I think, so it was May.
The moment
I think
you
it was
walked
like
out
May.
The door, I think, and you went to stand at the bus stop. Yeah.
It was a blizzard.
Like, yeah, not a little snowstorm, but.
So Isabel Galley taking her genius.
I think Isabel yeah. was like, don't you just use my name yeah. for your own benefit.
Maybe a bit flattered to begin with, and then she's like, well, I don't want Julia singing any vocals.
Yeah, maybe that was it.
She was just like, you guys aren't going to get away with having all the fun in my name without a little bit of trial.
Yeah, she was just joining in.
Yeah. Right?
In our own editable style, yeah. I guess. So how many tracks does the album have?
And I guess know you've that got offhand.
Plans it's... for a book with it.
And yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh my,
I think it's seven.
There's one yeah. that is an a cappella piece that I always kind of forget because it's like Lynx. But that was the whole group of people got together and sang this a cappella piece. So yeah, seven, and then the paintings. How many paintings?
So the original plan was that there would be seven like double page spread images for each. But they were taking me too long. I probably made them a bit ridiculously large because they're very large pieces. And I started to think, we're never going to get this out if I try and do seven. So there are three songs which have a full double page spread finished artwork, and the lyrics are kind of within spaces in the image. And there's a bunch of additional yeah. pieces which will probably be some like vignettes, and we'll drop them in to the booklet here and there. But
there's a body of work, really.
Yeah.
And is it coming out on vinyl or?
Absolutely. You can have a concept album in this vein, it has to be on vinyl.
Yeah, very much. That was yes. always an integral part of our plan.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That it had to be a record, an actual physical record.
Yes.
On vinyl.
So. Yeah, with a full booklet. So we're still figuring out those details and when it's going to come out. But hopefully by the end of this year, or else we're both going to lose our minds.
Yeah.
So there's a chance for people to have a bit of Isabel Galley magic in their houses on full vinyl with a fantastic artwork book as well. That's amazing. So in terms of the songs, if you had to choose... say your top three or top two. That's probably
I can't. They're all my babies.
Oh like, yes,
Isabel. The song is what started it all. Started
that's for me. I think the song Isabel kind of embodies the whole project in one song. If I had to pick one to kind of represent it, it would be Isabel. It would be that track. But they are all of them. There's so many amazing ones. Like,
you don't have to love all of them, but like, I do.
like Endless Flight is pretty incredible. Also, this is another one of the heavier ones, and it's got a killer riff.
Thanks. That's them flying over to the yeah, Downy Mountain,
yeah.
to do some mischief.
And it's just got that. It's got that. It's
thank you.
Dark and powerful. So that's kind of represents a different dimension of the record, I think.
Yeah.
And Transformation Song is just beautiful, and the sense of motion. I like, there's, it's one of those songs where you feel it in your body. You practically feel like you're physically running when you listen to it.
I'm glad that worked out.
It really does.
In terms of the album, have you thought about doing one that practitioners could maybe use in terms of get them up to speed, if you like?
So as far as useful practitioner parts of the album, I would say Transformation was intended to be a spell and a little bit of Horse and Haddock, which is another thing that has some lyrics that are based in her, a flying spell, essentially, as far as we could figure it out from the language. And I would say not in a lyrically confession-based piece, but the end of the album, this is a song called White Dunes. And in a way, it's my most personal song, and it's more about what I was going through, but imagining it through her eyes. Studio with at least one piece that's not fully done, because there is something, the freshest things often feel the most exciting. So that one is truly, it's a song, a pretty singy song, and then the second half of it, I just said, here's a psychedelic riff and let's see what the band can do. And I feel like everything that came, it's a long piece, there's probably 4 minutes of just pure psychedelic just trance-like, I don't know how to describe it. Adam Hartmother and Sun Ra both came to mind when I was doing it. That's probably, you know, a little bit self-flattering. But I really feel like there was something of the magic of the experience, the magic of the collaboration itself that came through musically at the end. And I would hope that would, in listening to it, people can go in deep during that.
I think so. There's something, it's very hypnotic, and it's got these amazing vocals that Mike added.
Yeah, two trembling bells came in and did some amazing vocals.
And they're really low and kind of drony, makes it sound like dull. It's not dull, but it's like got that kind of, it's like drone quality. And it's a kind of, you know, it could almost be like an accompaniment to shamanic journeying or something. It's called
meditation. It's a cosmic trip of whatever kind you prefer. But I really feel like that was sort of, to me, the payoff of the whole collaborative process, and coming here and doing it in Glasgow and with this amazing group of people, was that it really was a group effort at the end, and it was purely written here at the end of having gone through the Isabel experience. So I think of that as the dessert or the treat.
So if people get to see you live, will you be doing an extended?
I hope so, yeah. I want to get all the full five backing vocalists too. No half measures.
Are there other things that you'd like to talk about that we haven't touched on? Because I have some questions about Isabel, like relevance of Isabel today to kind of like modern women, because she's a bit of a figure of the past.
Yeah.
And you kind of brought her to life and embodied her now. And what significance do you think that Isabel Galdi has for, to use that fatal phrase, women of today?
Oh, enormous. Yeah. And I think Isabel has huge significance for women today. She is a breaker of boundaries. I think that was something that drew both of us to her. And there's a lot of that. That needs
many
done.
Boundaries are
not just for women, for everyone really today, but she's an exemplar of that.
She's a very, very fierce, liberated figure, and to me what was really interesting about that was that it was not a straightforward, good, easy story. It, you know, in real life, I think, you know, we deal with all these different themes of love and comfort versus freedom and exhilaration and danger versus safety in relationships and in our life choices. And anytime, you know, many times women do feel oppressed and maybe trapped in their lives. And Isabel is an example of someone who just broke out and went all the way.
And we've talked often about how she completely hears somebody who has completely burnt their bridges, there for whom there is no going back, and the which is terrifying, and not a situation that you'd really want to find yourself in day to day life, but can be required of us.
And there is some malevolence to her magic, which is something that I think people don't really know how to talk about in the magical world. You know, a lot of these old stories are, there's tons of curses
murder.
That's probably not the witchcraft that we were all drawn to, but there's something about that I think that's really worth looking at, that her malevolence is, I think, a side effect of how repressed she was. And that, you know, if you stay just bound up for too long, it can come out in a variety of ways. It comes out as sexual liberation, which is really amazing to read about in her confessions, and obviously has a perfect connection with rock and roll. But there is some darkness to her, and you have to look at how those things are bound together. And her relationship with the devil is very complicated.
Oh, yeah. It's very, very compelling.
she's liberated, but she's also still in the thrall of someone, and I'm not passing judgment on her at all. She's a very real story and a very real experience that I think a lot of women have had.
Yeah.
They have to work through themselves.
Absolutely. And I think we talked about her frustration and dissatisfaction and defiance. We were talking earlier and defiance was a word that came up a lot, which I think is key, but I think defiant not only of her situation in the trial circumstances, but in her life in general, in the limitations and hardships, because she, just from her speech, she's clearly intelligent, mentally creative woman, and who's feeling massively frustrated with this rural subsistence level life and wanting more, and is prepared to kind of do anything really to get it.
Who doesn't want to hear about that?
Yeah, that's not irrelevant today.
No, and she sort of falls in love or enthrall or sexual thrall to the devil, who's this ultimately powerful male figure. So you have the feminine and the male energies there, and
that relationship is a crazy mixture.
There's some love in it.
There are some romantic passages. There's that stuff about he'll come to my housetop in the shape of a crow, and he would call to me and I would know him by his voice and go forth.
That is what I used in White Dunes in the end. It was more of the plaintive romance side of it.
And then there's just really like down and dirty, like
exuberant. The fourth confession.
Yes, that's where all the exuberant sort of scenes are, which are for sure great value. They're kind of amazing. And just there's a glee and reveling.
Can you imagine a woman of that era telling those stories to those men?
Yeah, to the laird and the minister, and speaking so frankly.
Right, and she knows they're going to try to kill her anyway. And she's like, I'll tell you all about it. And you have to sit in that seat and listen. And it's wonderful.
And then write it down so we can read about it in years and years to come, and you guys can write an amazing album and do some amazing art. So she's still kind of alive in that kind of way.
I hope so. If I can add one thing to that, the very final line of the album before it goes into the psychedelic, trancy, hypnotic part, is talking about walking into a sacrifice, knowing that she's going to be executed for this, although there is no record of her execution, which I love, but knowing that she's standing up, kind of like walking towards the fire. And I tried to use the imagery of she's walking right up to the fire and saying, I would rather live this way, liberated and free for this time, than a much longer, safer lifetime in my old life, and that I'm walking into the fire and it will cast my shadow, and I will in some way remain alive through that act, and that's what I wanted to end the record on, is that she, through this defiant act, her shadow was cast all the way into our lives, and she's a figure still today. So that's my tribute to her.
I think that's wonderful. I can't really think of anything better to kind of add to that.
Isabel, we're trying to be nice. Please stop.
I was just going to ask you a final question. If people are interested in getting the booklet and the vinyl, what would they do if they find it?
Right now, they're just going to have to keep an eye on our various social medias, because we don't have a release date exactly yet, but it will be available if you look at it.
Yeah, so my website is stonemaidenart.com, and
it's probably the best place to keep an eye on.
It will be either come out there, and there'll be links there when we've got a release date. And
The Extra Every you can just find on social media. There's a Facebook page and an Instagram page. And
okay, hopefully that will be in the show notes, though.
Yes.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Just to let you know that the intro music and the outro music was provided by the Free Music Archive by a band called Pinniped, and the song's called The Burning of the Piper's Hut from their album Demo 2016,